Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We begin our program every day, Monday to Friday, noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time, with the latest on health and healing. This first study is about magnesium, a very important mineral that many people don't have enough of. And in this particular study done at Chongqing Medical University in China, if you're deficient in magnesium, it's linked to cardiovascular disease and premature death. It's published in the Journal of the American Heart Association. And it conducted the research at the first affiliated hospital of Chongqing Medical University. And they found a significant association between higher magnesium depletion scores and an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, cardiovascular death, and then death from all causes during the follow-up. And it's not a small study. It was 47,700 men and women who participated in the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. So keep in mind, you've got to get magnesium into the diet. And the best way of doing it, if you're uncertain which foods are good, is simply to take a supplement each day, ideally one in the morning, one in the afternoon. And by the way, on magnesium, I would suggest 450 milligrams in the morning with calcium and 450 milligrams in the afternoon. Now, our next study comes from Mashhad University of Medical Sciences in Iran. It's about pomegranate. Eating pomegranates and drinking the juice, both outstanding, ameliorates metabolic syndrome risk factors in patients with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Now, historically, a lot of people had liver disease, sclerosis of the liver, from drinking alcohol. Any amount of alcohol will harm the liver. But then a lot of people didn't drink alcohol, but they had fatty liver disease, which can kill you. Actually, it can lead to cancer of the liver. And that was from high fructose corn syrup. So many people were using this sugar in their soft drinks. Now, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is a metabolic syndrome related to liver disorders that has an increasing prevalence. Thus, the aim of this study is to evaluate the effects of pomegranate peel extract supplementation on hepatic status and hepatic means, your liver and metabolic syndrome. And it worked. So they used a placebo, 1,500 milligrams, or the actual pomegranate, 1,500 milligrams, and they had a substantial improvement. So, if you suffer from non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, by all means, make sure that you're getting pomegranate, 1,500 milligrams, and this was the peel extract, along with, and try to get as healthy a diet as possible. Now, from Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center, a new study about meditation. Meditation may mitigate migraine misery. That's good. Meditation might be a path to migraine relief, according to a new study from Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center. The study was designed to assess the safety, feasibility, and effects of a standardized meditation and yoga intervention called mindfulness-based stress reduction. Mindfulness-based stress reduction. And now that there's good science behind it, you'll start to see many of the yoga centers incorporating this, because it's just going to mean, as good as yoga is, and it is, except the hot yoga, which is stupid. I won't get into that now, but one day I will get into that. It's all cold. Anyhow, these adults were randomly assigned to two groups, with 10 receiving the meditation-based deep introspection, and the other group receiving just standard medical care. And this was over an 8-week period. And they did it for about 45 minutes, which is about right. And again, mindfulness-based stress reduction is good for anyone with any kind of stress, doesn't matter the stress. So just find yourself 45 minutes, maybe at lunchtime. Maybe you have a light meal for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and then meditate for 40 minutes. That would be good. But it really reduced the number and severity of migraines per month. And that is very important. If you've ever suffered from migraine, you'll appreciate that. Now, from the University of British Columbia, depression and anxiety may be the first symptoms of multiple sclerosis. New research indicates there may be a new way to help identify early stage multiple sclerosis. Scientists at the University of British Columbia report MS patients are nearly twice as likely to experience mental illness in the years leading up to the onset of the disease. More specifically, the authors found that psychiatric conditions, including anxiety and depression, may be associated with a pre-phase of MS, a precursor phase, to put it simply. Now, I've got something to add to this, because about 17 years ago, I did a study. It was a small study, and it was supervised by Dr. Martin Feldman, one of America's most prestigious orthodox neurologists, also qualified in psychiatry. But the key was, once people went through a whole process of sending in their medical records showing they had MS and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and ALS and autism, and that took about 6 months to screen all these people, getting all their medical records to show, yeah, you've got this condition, and here's the status of it. And none of these are medically reversible. They can be treated to slow down the progression, but none of them reverses it. And I was just curious, what role does the mind and the body play if it's given really healthy input on both levels? It was just a hypothesis. Well, the study was successful, but it was too small to be statistically significant. And someone will say, well, that's just, you know, that's the placebo effect. People like being around people who are very positive, and you're very positive. And so, you know, that's why they got better. So then I did a larger study, and where I didn't see the people at all. Dr. Feldman did. And then everyone was assessed. They came in. And the study was a long study. We met every week for 16 months. That's a long time, over a year and a half, every week. And you only got to stay in the study if you could prove week to week that you were adhering to the protocol, which was also for antidepression, anti-anxiety, anti-bipolar, schizophrenia. All that was a part of the protocol. But from a non-pharmacological approach, there were no drugs used. At the end of the study, the results were so important that at least six different scientific conferences out there invited Dr. Feldman and I to attend and present our findings, which we did in Chicago and Washington and other places. I found that people with multiple sclerosis, because we had someone in there named Kenny, and by the way, Kenny, wonderful guy. He was just at the retreat we just finished last week. We had a two-week health retreat. I'm sorry a lot of people weren't able to get in, but I kept telling you got to get in early because there are, and I don't like big groups. I like people not to feel overcrowded, where everybody gets time and attention. Whatever they need, we're there to help them with. But it's not medical. It's not about diagnosing or treating disease. We don't do that. It's all about promoting wellness, but at a level that most people are completely unfamiliar with, and including people even in my own audience who were surprised at how deep the work went when it came to understanding the underlying cause of most illnesses, energy. And what I found in the people with multiple sclerosis is they had a long history of having conflicts in their relationships or at work or with friends and family members, and these were not resolved. Instead, by the term I coined today in the last 2 years, maladapted, because we only talk about adaptation. Okay, well, we all adapt or are forced to the circumstance. If I want to go in the Marine Corps, they're going to shave my head no matter what I want. You know, you have to adapt to that if you want to be in there. It's going to be tough. If you're not capable, then they don't want to see you get hurt or killed or heart causing others to, so you just don't make it. Not everybody makes the grade. In any case, in life, I found that we got it half right and only half right, because it's not just about adaptation, it's also about maladaptation. What happens when we don't want to exceed what our limits have been, our self-imposed limits, or maybe other people's conditioning us to believe you can't do that, you're not that smart, Get back in line. Obey. Be a good citizen. You know? And what if you're not? What if you're curious? What if you look for the truth? What if you find the truth and are not willing to compromise on the truth because other people don't want to know your truth? It offends them, scares them. We can't both have the truth. So if I've got my beliefs and you got your beliefs, one of us doesn't have the right belief. Well, that's not true either, because you can maladapt and still have the wrong beliefs. We've seen that. We see it right now. But then there's a third path, and this is the path those who reversed their disease took, the path of transcending the limitations or the negative effects of maladaptation or adapting. You transcend it. It's a quantum concept. I don't have time to get into it today, but I will on an upcoming program. And I spent about 22 hours during 2 weeks talking about maladaptation, adaptation versus transformation. And people actually came away transformed. When I say that, I mean it. You'd have to see them to appreciate it. Anyhow, more on that on upcoming. But the MS patient, especially Kenny, once he transformed his crisis, all disease reversed. Three separate groups, a board-certified neurologist, could find no trace of demyelinization of the central nervous system. He was as healthy as can be. And yet he had advanced multiple sclerosis so bad he couldn't walk up the steps. He had to be carried up the steps and down the steps to each meeting. So it wasn't a myth. It wasn't placebo. There's another reality in life. And that is transformation. You know, I just want to share that with you. But this study showed that there is definitely an emotional component. Well, if there's an emotional component like depression and anxiety to MS, why shouldn't it also be with every other disease, including cancer? Just yesterday, I went to the farmer's market where I go every Saturday to one farmer's market because it's got some stuff no one else seems to have. And then I went to one on Sunday where they make a lot of stuff, grow a lot of stuff organically that I am not right at this time, being as busy as I am. I'm not doing what I normally do, grow all my own sprouts, etc. And one of the people who's got a medical background said, oh, and by the way, and told me that they had a disease kind of nonchalantly. We're talking about a killer disease in stage. Wow. And so I said, can I talk with you for a moment? Yeah. And I'm going to help this person. But, and I'll track it. And hopefully at some point, this person will come on the air when they've improved or reversed this condition. And I said, before we meet next week, write down all the things in your life that you've been stressed about, but you've not resolved. Unrequited stress is one of the most primary causes of all disease, and yet we don't recognize it, and we should. So, and the person said, I've been stressed for 25 years, and I've done nothing about it. Then that threw me back to 2 weeks ago. It was, 1 week ago. And it was on the last day of our get-together before everyone went home. And I asked the people here, and I'm going to ask you the same thing. If you're completely honest and you can't lie, how much of your life have you wasted, non-productive? Oh, yeah, you've done things, been responsible, taken responsibility very seriously, but I'm not discussing. I'm talking about yourself, where you looked after you, where you cared and loved and nurtured yourself and went for your desires, your projections, your creativity, where you broke out and started to live a life that was more meaningful to you and not just being responsible for everyone else. And then one step further, how many of those years were wasted because the people in your life would not change but expected you to change to meet their needs for you to be in their life? And you did. You changed to meet their needs, in which case now you're living with this sense of angst, what I call the big empty. Every single person there said, one woman said 45 years. Yeah, 45 years of her life she wasted. And none of these people were joking. They weren't hyperbolizing. So I'm asking you, how many years of your life have you wasted because you were honoring other people's expectations? You, I'm a good daughter. I'm a good son. I'm a good mother. I'm good. No one's questioned that. But were you good to yourself first? Because I can tell you, I've helped a lot of people reverse their conditions in life by doing nothing more than allowing themselves to be free, self-loving, and then to start that scale of learning, growing, and advancing towards their own goals, not just someone else's goals. More on this on an upcoming program. I'm going to do a whole discussion on this on, in fact, I'm going to do it today on our classroom on the air. So, and finally, so mind you, your mindset, your stress levels, how you adapt or maladapt or transcend, that has an enormously important bearing on every single cell in your body. So that's a place to start. And finally, from the University of Incarnate, black currant nectar, which you can buy in a health food store or online, shows exercise benefits for college students. So daily consumption of black currant nectar for 8 days can reduce muscle damage and inflammation after exercise. And that's important. And this is from the university down in San Antonio, Texas. So I thought that was good. And mind you, the nectar is thick. You know, it's almost like a jam you put on bread. But I've taken the nectar and I've just unsweetened nectar. And it's kind of bitter. And I put it into a smoothie. So it can help. All right. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come right back at you. Got a lot to share today. Oh, and by the way, please call in. Let me know from your own perspective, and no one else can be you. No one else can answer this, not even your family or friends, because they don't know what you've hidden. They don't know what you've said no to or yes to when you should have said the opposite. You do. How many years of your life do you feel that you have wasted when had you been honest and authentic to yourself and your own needs? That doesn't mean you're abrogating your needs to other people and children and family and society. It means that you also were in that mix. So you didn't deny what was important to you if it wasn't important to other people. Because sometimes, and I hear this all the time, I'll see someone, they've got a problem, I help them with a problem, and 2 months later I see them maybe on the street, and this happens when I was in Manhattan on the Upper West Side. I see people all the time. And just stopping on the street or in the health food store, having a juice, and someone say, well, I just want to let you know that I got on your protocol and felt great, lost weight. But then, you know, my family, I could live with them. They didn't like this whole health thing, and they were going to change. And so I had to make 2 meals each day. And still they're not happy. Even though I make them their meal, and I make my own, they're not happy. So just to save from arguing, I had to go back to the old ways. But they don't know I'm taking some vitamins, kind of doing that surreptitiously on the side. Whoa, you can take all the vitamins in the world, and if you're stressed, that's not going to make a damn bit of difference. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Naw. I'm going to play a few clips. Let me just set the first one up. It's short. It's only a minute, 33 seconds with Mark Zuckerberg. His new Meta glasses. Do you remember over the last 2 years, I've on multiple occasions said that what they have planned for you is to live in a seducingly, almost euphoric soma state. Soma refers back to Aldous Huxley's taking drugs to get to that very blissful place where you don't think about anything. Of course, you're not going to stand out. You're not going to criticize. You're not going to march, demonstrate. You're not going to protest. You're just alive. And then about a year ago, I played you a clip from Professor Harari, who is one of the leading spokespersons for the World Economic Forum. And Then you have him saying, well, what do we do if people don't work? Because your jobs won't be here. Oh, right now, I would say you should do some really in-depth research before continuing any education in any college in the United States University. Because medical doctors, medical diagnosticians, laboratory technicians, school teachers, professors, consultants, art graphic designers, musicians, producers, all of these are going to be challenged. And in our society, which is a vulture capitalist society, it's completely understandable. Right now, I may pay $300 an hour to a lawyer to do research on a case and see if I have enough justification in case law in order to go forward and not get my case thrown out of court. Let's say it takes 10 hours. Okay, well, you're up to several thousand dollars, $3,000 to $5,000, even before you go into court. That's just one small part. Artificial intelligence could review every single case law in the world in 3 seconds. You pay one fee, a moderate fee compared to what you would pay if you're paying individuals to do this. And some law firms spend an enormous amount of money just on research. So we're in for a pickle. And I suggest that anywhere between, at the low end, 40%, high end, 80% of all jobs in the United States will be adversely affected by automation, Visa, or in this case, artificial intelligence within the next 3 years. So he said, okay. And then they came up with another idea. We're going to give people a small amount of money, $2,100 a month to live off of. But you're not going to have mortgage because you won't own anything. They never tell you who will own your house, your car, your wristwatch. They will. They meaning the stakeholders. And those are the most powerful people in the world. As if they needed more. Well, there's never enough when you become a millionaire. And in your lifetime, you'll never be happy with the billions you've made. It's just a sickness. In any case, he said that you'll be watching virtual reality with headset on all day long. Okay. And by that time, they'll have like 1,000 different programs, or 2,000, 3,000 programs. You just select what you want to do that day. You put it into the head visor, and you just lay down, and that's it. What are all the side effects? They never give you side effects. And that's what I'm concerned about with these new, this is the latest, and this really was a quantum leap. This is all in the same year that a lot of people rejected the other Meta headsets that they had. Listen to what he has to say is available right now, premiering this month, for around $350. Here he is before groups all over the world interconnected on Zoom to make this big announcement about Meta, M-E-T-A, glasses.
The next generation of Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses. These are the first smart glasses that are built and shipping with Meta AI in them. Starting in the US, you're going to get this state-of-the-art AI that you can interact with hands-free wherever you go. We're going to be issuing a free software update to the glasses that makes them multimodal. So the glasses are going to be able to understand what you're looking at when you ask them questions. So if you want to know what the building is that you're standing in front of, or if you want to translate a sign that's in front of you to know what it's saying, or if you need help fixing this sad, leaky faucet, you can basically just talk to Meta AI and look at it, and it'll walk you through it step by step how to do it. We built in one more feature into these smart glasses. You are going to be able to live stream to your friends and followers from your glasses.
Everybody is ready to race, and I am getting ready too. Let's go.
Switching to glasses.
Being able to share what you're doing live with your friends and and followers while staying completely in the moment is the kind of thing that you can only do on smart glasses. So, all right, these Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses, we're launching them on October 17th, starting at $299, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what you all think of them.
Okay, you're going to have enormous success. Everyone is going to want them, or most everyone. So now your Meta, which was suffering billions of dollars in losses over the past 2 years, is going to have a huge spike, something inexpensive the average person can use, which means that, hey, I'm fortunately now with the movement that wants to compel speech, yes, not just in Canada, but in the United States, you can no longer call and say, Mom, Dad. You can call and accurately to them say, testicles producing sperm, or vagina that bleeds, or chest feeder. Either one's fine with them. Wow. And why is it most this comes out of the professional class of educated women in California? Something's missing there. In any case, here's the part they're not telling you. Oh, we can look at each other. We don't need to go to Zoom anymore. We don't need our computer. Wherever we're at, we're there. The internet of all things. Good idea. Now, give me 10 reasons why you should never do something this stupid. Can't think of any? I'll just kick it off then. Why don't you go to today, go to GaryNull.com, go under articles, and read the longest article that I'm aware of ever written, fully documented, and with two independent scholars documenting the footnotes is accurate, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of footnotes, on 5G and why it is so extremely dangerous. All right? And you'll see at least 10,000 studies published in the peer-reviewed literature showing the dangers of electromagnetic frequencies. Interesting, because just at the latest retreat, someone came who was suffering from environmental, well, it's in a category called environmental sciences, but suffering from condition due to electromagnetic frequency. Now, that person, just being in the country, had a remarkable improvement in health. How do you think, common sense, you don't have to be a scientist, how do you think you're going to project what you see in someone else can see you and hear you while just wearing these glasses? Because these are massively powerful electromagnetic pulsed energies. I see. And where are they on your body? Well, let's see, between your ears, across your eyebrow. So your brain is going to be affected. Any studies on electromagnetic frequency and brain disease? Yes, lots. So we're putting on something that is known and proven with thousands of studies to be dangerous. So why don't you ask Mark, how many human studies did you do and over what period of time to show that this would have no adverse effect on a person already sustaining some form of glioblastoma, astrocytoma? How about one of the turbo cancers of the brain that seem to be so common now, including among medical doctors, interesting enough, including a whole group of doctors who were pro-vaccine and were castigating people for not getting vaccine, and now they're all dead, or almost all are dead, very fast, not the normal speed of a cancer killing someone. But now the turbo cancers due to the vaccines, yeah. Oh, and by the way, I have a special report. I won't have time today, but on tomorrow's program, remember I told you I'm not going to fly anymore, because 5,000 pilots were shown to have falsified their medical records. I see. So they may have myocarditis or endocarditis and not know it, or know it and suppress it because they couldn't fly. How many pilots do you think died while flying, and only because their first officer was able to take control? I got a whole list, their names, how old they were, all young, and they all died from the same thing. Gee whiz, what happens when you don't have an experienced second hand on board? You got an equity person. They like flying, not a whole lot of experience, and the main guy or woman has a heart attack. That's real. It's actually happening, and we have all the proof I mean, it's a huge number compared to what historically are the number of pilots having a heart attack or dying. Anyhow, that'll be tomorrow. But now we've got people wearing these glasses that risk the potential of all forms of neurological conditions. What will happen if a person with multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer, ALS, autism wears these, and suddenly the rebalancing of the brain chemistry is now disrupted by a massive amount? And where do they go from here? Well, they're almost there, because everything is based upon the Internet of all things, the smart cities. And by the way, the smart city, which has been already accomplished in Great Britain and other, I think, 9 other countries, is coming to California. And we have a clip on that. I won't play it today. We're wisely an engineer going over their, you know, what they are doing and why, found enormous amounts of problem, but they didn't know enough. Here's what's interesting. Here's an engineer that should know this, about what's the purpose of a small smart city. Everywhere you need to go in a given day in your life, you can walk to or bike to in 15 minutes. Well, how's that possible? Because they're going to know what you need. They're going to know what I need. My desires and needs could change day to day. Nope, because they're going to be able to read your brain. So they know what you need. So what you need is going to be provided. Providing you get chipped, one in the brain, and one in the flesh between the web, between the thumb and the forefinger. You're going to have more electromagnetic frequencies going on in that environment than any place else on the planet. How do you think that's going to do for people's health? Oh, they didn't do that test. No, no test on electromagnetic frequency, even though every single thing in your house is going to be powered by 5G, 6G, 7G. Yeah, they're going up. So you're going to be living in one of the most singularly toxic environments. That's like saying, where should we go? It's 1945. Let's go to Hiroshima on our holiday. No, I got a better idea. Let's go to Nagasaki. Not the best place to go on a vacation. Think of all the people who had to live there till they survived or succumbed. So I have a lot of reasons why I would never buy something like this. But I'm not the, you know, I'm not the person out there buying this stuff. Americans are. Well, how do we get to where we're? And I dealt with this last night. Every Sunday, we do a meeting with all the people in the anti-aging study. The ones on campus, those meetings were finished a week ago. The ones who are doing it from home, they still have another month. And wow, terrific. They're all sticking to their protocols. But they had questions. So I addressed these questions. And one of the questions is that if I'm so motivated to do the right thing, why do I keep sabotaging and doing the wrong thing? Now, I gave an answer. I said, now think of this. Does this make more sense? Our entire society is based upon, you poor thing. Oh, you poor thing. Didn't just make the wrong choice, and is there some kind of outcome? Not your fault, clearly, no matter what you do. What if you just reversed it and started with, I wouldn't have done something if I'm a relatively smart person unless I had a motive in doing it, motivation to do it, discipline to follow through, and not care about the consequence. Would I know the consequence? If you're a smart person, you're going to know the consequence. Otherwise, it's like asking someone, do you really think smoking 4-pack cigarettes a day is harmful? What? It's harmful? Says who? That science is not in yet. Ah. Okay, as the person sitting there with their lung being removed, can I have a cigarette? We've got to get out of the idea that every mistake you make, it's someone else's responsibility to fix or blame. Why not take some responsibility? Why not just be honest? Are we even capable as a nation, as a people, being honest about anything anymore? Some are, but most are not. So if you can't be honest about the choices you make and the likely outcome because you chose not to do your homework, or you didn't want to do the homework because you didn't want to know the truth. If I go looking for the truth, Gary, I'm not going to be able to have fun with this thing. Just imagine all the things you could do with it when you have got your glasses and you're out there videoing everything to someone or live streaming. So you don't want to know what it's going to do to your brain or your body. You don't want to know where a smart house, where every single device in that house is monitoring you 24/7, as is your car. It can start and stop itself. your bank account with no currency, except a digital currency, and all this, and what are you supposed to do? How about nothing? Because you're no longer required. In their minds, you're just a worthless, useless, their word, not mine, eater. They'll have you eating what they want you to eat. They'll control every aspect of your life. How far in the future? It's not in the future. It's in the past. If you've been paying attention, they've been doing this. But now they're full frontal, going full out. Oh, and by the way, this new reality show where people are in these like cages, but made out of glass, and they're completely naked, full frontal nudity, to do some kind of dating. You needed to go that level? And Smacking, one of the most powerful shows out there as far as popularity. Who thinks it's a good idea to watch two human beings dislocate each other's jaw, eye socket, cause hematomas, cause all forms of brain-capable concussions? Who in their right mind would want to watch that? Oh, most Americans. And the Kardashians, most Americans. And over 120 other reality shows, most Americans. And who would vote for the idiocy of a Republican or Democrat? Most Americans. Who knows nothing about the world? Most Americans. So at some point, we've got to take responsibility for being among the dumbest people in the world. So let's go to the next clip and see from another perspective how Americans got so stupid. Their title, not mine, but I think it's appropriate. And then you'll have an understanding of how all this was created by intent.
This episode of the Jimbly Kimberly live show where clueless residents of Los Angeles fail to name a single country.
Is it South Africa?
Yeah, the country of Asia.
Greenland or Iceland or something.
Although these are no doubt cherry-picked, and I'm sure if you stood in a big city all day and shoved a camera in people's faces and asked them questions, you'd be able to find 3 minutes worth of people who couldn't answer on the spot.
Miss, for a dollar, name a woman.
Name a woman?
Yeah.
But the stereotype that Americans are ignorant about the wider world is largely true. These people can't name a country because they don't care about other countries. 40% of Americans have a passport, compared to 66% of Canadians and 76% of Brits. In 1994, it was only 10% of Americans. But that doesn't mean Americans have gotten more globe-trotting since then. It was because after an above-average episode of the news, it became mandatory to need a passport when entering Canada and Mexico. So it's fair to say that a very small percent of Americans will be leaving this corner of the world. As I said in a previous video, America has all you'd ever want geographically within her borders. Why go anywhere else? The foreign cultures, maybe? Americans don't care about that either. On the list of the highest grossing movies in the USA, you have to go all the way to 520th place to get a movie that isn't American. It's Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, by the way. Couldn't even beat The Nutty Professor. Somebody please check up on Ang Lee, I think he might have killed himself. Neither do global affairs hold the average American's interest. When asked about the Kyoto Climate Accords, who the Taliban are, or who Nicolas Sarkozy is, Americans are woefully underinformed compared to other developed nations. In 2009, only half knew that last year's Olympics were held in Beijing. Oh, but of course, when asked to name American celebrities, they had no trouble at all. At the same time, we non-Americans are flooded with American culture. Some British people know more about American politics and history than their own.
Once you're dropped into the trench, depth or the Z-axis is...
It's Z-axis, you floppy-haired moron. France had to pass laws banning radio stations from playing too much American music. There are only two countries in the world where Coca-Cola is not sold. Wait, scratch that. This journalist from Finland bought a Coke at a water park in Pyongyang in 2017. And what's this hiding in the background of somebody's holiday snaps at the National Hotel de Cuba? Look, you know something's up when remote tribesmen in the Amazon rainforest who don't even have electricity know who Michael Jackson is. Americans used to be quite well read. After the Second World War, Americans consumed 63% of all the newspapers in the world, and they used this to their advantage. In 1948, the newly formed United Nations created a list of human rights that all countries should strive to uphold. One area that Americans were particularly interested in was this one: Article 19. Everyone has the right to freedom of expression and opinion, and receive and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. What the USA wanted was a completely level playing field. Anyone can buy any media from any other country. A global free market of ideas, released from the shackles of censorship. For if anyone can gain access to the truth, we cannot be marched into the same kind of ignorance and intolerance that characterized the Axis nations of the war. This is admirable. Freedom of speech is a core value of the United States and many other allied nations. But some delegates, like those from India, questioned the US's motives. If you believe in an equal access to information and culture, shouldn't you redistribute some of your media creating capacity to developing nations like ours, so that we have an equal opportunity to tell the world our stories? The Americans would not budge. Of course, they knew deep down that India was right. The American delegation to the convention was highly populated by journalists and media magnates. They knew that if countries couldn't afford their own news, they would be increasingly reliant on buying news from American wire companies like the Associated Press, which was good for both the media companies' profits, but also the US State Department, who would no doubt have been licking their lips at the prospect of a billion people reading news with a specific American spin on it. In 1944, the Associated Press sold news to 38 countries. Within 8 years, that had doubled to 70 countries. In the 1950s, around half of films shown in European and Asian cinemas were American, two-thirds in Mexico, Brazil, and Argentina. Which makes sense. Americans made grand Technicolor films brimming with Hollywood sparkle because they could afford to. Whereas war-torn Europe, impoverished Mexico, and nuclear-obliterated Japan were stuck making small-scale comedies to keep up morale. One of the most popular French movies in 40s France was 1949's The Big Day, a mostly plotless movie where a whimsical French postman gets into wacky mischief in a quaint village. There just wasn't the money or resources for anything else. Hollywood captured the European public's imagination, and they wanted more. But why is it only a one-way street? Because while you can do or say whatever you want within the United States, the Constitution also says that the American government can regulate what goes in or out. During the Cold War, anything that might be considered communist propaganda could be seized by the post office and never delivered. Books or even souvenirs from communist countries, for example. Pamphlets criticizing US foreign policy. Immigration reached a low point in the early 70s, with only 4.7% of Americans being foreign-born, limiting Americans' interaction with different cultures. Obviously, it wasn't totally like North Korea. Plenty of foreign movies and music were allowed into the US. But the media that caught on was either already Americanized, or so plastically exotic that it doesn't really say anything about the culture where it's from. The Beatles were British, yes, but they got their start covering American rock and roll musicians. When John Lennon stepped out of line, the American government made sure that he knew it. Movies imported from Japan were mostly samurai flicks, and very few movies set in the modern day. The film Ikiru is widely considered the best Japanese film ever made, if you ignore people who have never felt the touch of a woman. But this existential drama about a depressed, lonely man was only given a limited release in California, and the poster was edited to feature a stripper who is only in the movie for like 1 minute. The narrow stream of European movies that made it into the USA came in the form of the French New Wave cinema, movies that were stylistically inspired by American films, but also so stuffy that few audiences would ever want to watch them anyway.
Qu'est-ce que ça peut te faire?
Ça ne va pas, non?
Non, rien. Je voulais dire cette phrase avec une idée précise. Je ne savais pas quelle était la meilleure façon d'exprimer cette idée. Ou plutôt, je le savais.
This was further stifled by the Hays Code, a set of extremely strict regulations that were in place from 1934 to 1968. If you've ever wondered why old black and white films seem so dry, it's because of these rules. Some things that were completely banned from ever being shown in any film included: bad guys winning, all movies had to end with the police outwitting the evil criminals or the criminals causing their own demise. Any nudity, even the silhouette of a booba, is an instant ban. Blood or dead bodies. When people get shot in old films, they usually just clutch the wound, but no actual blood is seen. Pointing a gun at somebody in the same frame. This is why guns are always held at waist height. Kissing for longer than 3 seconds. Interracial couples. White people as slaves. Criticism of religion or of any other country. Naturally, this prevented the more artistically liberal European films from being shown in American cinemas, and when they did get a US release, they were usually edited to remove the violence in movies and sex on TV to comply with the good old-fashioned values. At least until the rules were abolished in 1968 and replaced by the age rating system we have today. Even as the Cold War ended and the internet gave Americans unparalleled access to the rest of the world and all of human knowledge, they still preferred to hang out on a handful of American-made websites dominated by Americans. The insular culture of 20th century America has carried over to the 21st. Tightened border security after Septiembre Undécimo means foreign musicians can have a hard time getting visas. In 2002, the touring visa of a German orchestra was cancelled after it was discovered the cellist had a criminal record for shoplifting a pair of tweezers in 1991. When they tried again for a visa in 2004, the cellist had to undergo an hour-long interview with Homeland Security and had to physically pick up his visa from the US Embassy. Global cultures might be more present in American media, but they're always through the lens of American characters, such as The Last Samurai starring Tom Cruise, where he plays a white guy in 1870s Japan. 7 Years in Tibet, another American in China. Indiana Jones, American in Egypt. The Bourne Identity, American in France, Inglourious Basterds. All
right. Gary? No. You have about 3 minutes left.
Then buy a movie! Is there any hope for America, or are they destined to be a stinky, dumb, redneck country forever? Maybe. In 2000, 92% of the music in the USA Top 50 was American, making it the second most insulated market in the world after Pakistan. But today, it's more like 60%, with Brits, Canadians, Latin Americans, and Africans making themselves more seen in the charts. Each year, there are more foreign films nominated at the Academy Awards than ever before. What used to be an American-only pay-to-win award show is now an international pay-to-win award show. As social media platforms have an element of randomness in what they show users, there is a higher chance of Americans being shown videos from other countries, forcing them to take note of what is happening. It seems the revolution will be TikToked. I've been giving the impression throughout this video that it's all or most Americans who are terminally uneducated. But American ignorance isn't as evenly distributed as you'd think. That study I mentioned earlier? When adjusting for English proficiency, income, and education levels, Americans are really no different from their European counterparts, and in some cases, marginally smarter. Knowledge about the wider world even correlates to political views, and not in the way that you'd think. A 2022 survey asked Americans 12 questions about the world, such as, who is the British Prime Minister? What does the Indian flag look like? And what this symbol represents? The people who answered the most questions correctly were committed Democrats and committed Republicans. Swing voters, those enlightened centrist chads, were the stupidest. Only 40% of moderate Republicans could name the US Secretary of State, compared to 60% of convicted Republicans. Only half of moderate Democrats knew that the USMCA trade agreement replaced NAFTA, compared to 66% of convicted Democrats. Also, I just thought it was funny that the more Americans know about the European Union, the more favorable view they have of it. So are Americans ignorant? Many of them are. But it isn't their fault. It's a mix of geography, American imperialism, Cold War paranoia, moral puritanism, and economic factors that create a paradoxical nation that is both the most expansive empire, but also an informational prison of their own making. God bless you, stupid bastards.
Okay, well, about 80% of what he has to say, I would challenge. For example, he did not mention in there the fact that the baby boomers, my generation, did more traveling to more places when we were young than any generation before, because we were curious about other cultures in the world. We wanted to serve in the Peace Corps and help with the developing nations further develop. And then we did our part, went back into families and our own concerns. What I would say is that one statement that I would say is true is that many, not the majority, but many Americans don't care about what's happening outside of their own private life. We've become a nation in the last 10 years to 20 years that's just, everything is self-absorbed. Me, 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 instead of we. Ask any American, do you care about women? Absolutely. Their rights? Yeah. Their freedoms? Yes. Their equality? Yes. Then why are you wearing a dress? Where 900 million garments are brought in from Bangladesh alone. And they make anywhere between 14 to 24 cents an hour. That's exploiting. That's wearing something that a woman around the world was exploiting. And do you care about children? Yes. How about the Congo? What about it? Or how about Nigeria, where you have 25 to 30,000 poor people living right at a mine site where they have to go in there and risk their lives. Many die because there's no heavy equipment, using their hands and carrying cobalt and other minerals that are necessary to make your cell phone, your computer, your laptop, your car, your satellite. If you cared about other people, shouldn't you care about other people around the world? Or is it just your people you care about, your tribe, your family, your friends? Does he even extend that far? Because how long did it take? 25 years before parents finally realized that what they were being taught in some schools by some teachers was invading the parents' sovereign right to guide their children through their moral ways, to teach them rights and wrong. And then they showed up and they were angry. And what did the government do? Immediately cast them as domestic terrorists. And where was the protest? Since when is it all right to label someone an enemy of the state who's simply asking about why are you showing pornography to a four-year-old? So where were they for the previous generation? Well, there was a time in our culture up through the mid-1970s where you wouldn't have had to be concerned about certain things, so it was understandable people didn't have the same attention. But still, we had PTA, parents, teachers, meetings. So I commend the parents who took it upon themselves to go to these meetings and see what was being taught and was it appropriate. And unfortunately, we're not there now. So those are just a few things. But I'm gonna open the phones up. We're coming to the end of our program from WBAI. We are a minute away. They're going to go to the news. We're going to continue the top of the hour. So I believe that there's an awful lot of Americans who are curious, who are open-minded, who are compassionate, who are very concerned and want to help make it a better world. But why aren't they given any attention or credit? There are a lot of kids going to school who are there to learn, not to party, not to binge drink. Why aren't they in their life and their lifestyle and their behavior and their parenting, their parents, why aren't they not ever given any credit? Why do we always show the worst of something and never the best of it? We have a duality in our lives. We have choices. We can make a good choice, a bad choice. So why do we focus only upon those who make bad choices, never upon people making right choices? There's just a bias, because if it doesn't bleed, it doesn't lead. That's the saying. Good news is bad for selling papers. Bad news sells papers and media. So I just want you to know that there's an awful lot of you out there who are very responsible, very caring, very nurturing, and you don't allow an ideology or a body politic to control your thoughts and actions. What if you're wrong on something, but everyone else by consensus says, well, we're right. And then we find out they weren't right, they were wrong, with deadly consequences like smoking for 100 years when we should have stopped it. Politics and profiteering kept that from happening. Think of all the doctors in the United States right now. Think of the pediatricians advocating for vaccines, including COVID vaccines, including multiple boosters, knowing full well they don't have a single, not one single study showing that by taking the vaccine, a young person's life will be enhanced, but there's a lot of evidence that it will end up causing injury or death. What about all the women, 10 million women a year, taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy instead of natural hormone replacement therapy, with the increased risk of heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and dementia? That's about 1.4 million American women are sacrificed with injury or death each year because of a consensus that it must be right because we've been doing it this way for so long and we're too comfortable in what we're doing and we're rewarded even if the patient dies. Same thing with cancer. If you're so set upon promoting only surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, and you're losing at least 550,000 patients a year just doing what you tell them to do, how can you feel so confident that you're doing the right thing when you have that many people who have paid not just their money, but with their life to show that you're arrogant, that we should be closing down these damn clinics and looking at therapies that actually work? Why don't we do the same thing for heart disease? Why isn't the cardiology associations and cardiologists looking at the natural approach to heart disease? Well, we have a person out there, a cardiologist, who's did two studies, famous studies, that reversed heart disease without medication. I was there. I filmed him 40 years ago. Then he and I appeared on PBS to debate a group of doctors who didn't think it was the right thing. And he's around today. Anyone pay attention? No. Anyone in medicine decide maybe there's a better way? No. No, because you're not going to disrupt a $200 to $300 billion a year profit center. And that's why we got junk on television. And who on television's protecting the children? Nobody. Who in the government? Nobody. Who at the FDA? Nobody. How about the Surgeon General? Has he ever said anything of a positive nature to prevent a disease? Not that I'm aware of. All there to advocate on behalf of some sponsor. And who owns those companies? BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street. And why hasn't anyone like 60 Minutes done an expose on them? Because guess who owns the majority of stock in CBS, ABC, NBC, and Fox? BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard. You're beginning to see that Americans are not as worldly nor as wise as they could be if they had had freedom from propaganda. And if that fellow, again, I disagree with 70% of what he said, but if he had added that into the equation, then maybe we could understand that how powerful propaganda is. It's extremely powerful. And we're not paying attention. There was a study, by the way, and the study was they took a group of women who had no disfigurement at all, and they wanted to show, you know, how biased people would be if you, in a job application, if you had scars on your face. So they had artists come in and fake scars all over their face. And they were told, you know, there's going to be bias against you. But before they went out, they said, let's just touch it up. So they touched it up. What they did is they erased them. But the women weren't aware of this. There were no mirrors. And so they went in and they interviewed. Every single woman said that she experienced bias because of the scars on her face. But there were no scars. That's how powerful a belief is. And that's something that we're subjected to all the time. So we have to look at all the different pieces of the puzzle before we can better understand why Americans, why college students today don't know which side of the country the Atlantic or Pacific Ocean's on, or who the Queen of England, which country she's the queen of. And none of these students can answer these correctly. So yes, we are in a knowledge deficit. We have too much information and too little knowledge, and from that knowledge, even less wisdom emanating from it. for critical thinking, common sense, and understanding who we are. Could all Americans suddenly become worldly and better able to understand why we shouldn't be in Ukraine, the history of Ukraine? Yes, they could. That's entirely possible. Because no one is born with a intelligence deficit brain. Some might be born with some form of brain abnormalities or get it through vaccinations or environmental exposure. But it's if you do everything for a person, if you don't have them have to study, then what is the incentive for them to grow? Then they're going to be illiterate because of conditioning. And with these glasses, and now with the whole idea of why read a whole book when you can just get one paragraph that gives you a synopsis of the book. And people then think that's okay and enough people do it. Well, that's the common consensus. Never live by consensus. I watched everyone that I knew growing up live by consensus, and they're all dead now. And yet they died with their beliefs unshaken. That's how powerful, much like a cult, a consensus can be. So the fact that a lot of people are doing the wrong thing doesn't make it right. But if you need to be a part of those people, then you're going to change and adapt so they feel okay with you. And being unaware of where South Africa is on a map, or who we're fighting, if that's part of what you have to sacrifice to become a member of a guild, a club, a sorority, a fraternity, a tribe, and we're going tribal, we're reverting back to tribalism, and that's completely intentional. But are we inherently stupid? No, we are not. And he is wrong on that statement, in my opinion, because he doesn't know how many people want to know, would find it wonderful to know about the world, but have not yet had the experience, nor even the opportunity for that experience. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.